I'd like to call the April 7th resource, Senate Resource Committee to order. It's 3:40. Members in attendance are Senator Stedman, Senator Elton, Senator Kukesh, Senator Dyson, and myself, Senator Waggon. Oh, I'm sorry. It's April 12th, for the record. The first bill in front of us today is going to be Senate Bill 166. That's the wildlife conservation tag. In front of you, you have a CS. And I'd like to have a motion at this time to adopt the CS. Senator Dyson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I assume that's the backslash I version.
Yes.
I move that we accept as our working document the 816 / I Kane 2206 as our working document for CS Senate Bill 166.
Is there any objection? Okay, with no objection, we have / I in front of us. I'd just like to make a couple of comments. You know, we heard this bill before we got started, what, a couple of months ago on PPT, and there were just all kinds of questions about the bill, and all kinds of problems kept coming up in public testimony. So what I did is, and I've talked to the sponsor of this, and he doesn't agree with me, and we understand that. But it's what I've done with this CS is I've made it permissive. And I've drafted this so the department, if they so choose, can do just like the Iditarod or the Fur Rondi or anybody else. They can have designed and sell collectible pins and put those out. They can put them out in gift shops. They can put them on cruise ships, wherever, and they become a collectible pin. And the Iditarod collectible, the wood Iditarod pins that are, they're limited to 1,049 pins in production run, but they sell for $20 a piece. So if you wholesale those out at $10 a piece, they can keystone them in gift shops for $20, or if they want to discount them a little bit, they can do that. But I've talked to a lot of Alaskans, and a lot of them have said, yeah, they'd love to buy something like that, and they do it voluntarily instead of us trying to force everybody to do it and getting into that situation. I thought it'd be a compromise and a good way to at least attempt to get a program started. So with that, I'll shut up and Senator Stedman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, could we go to page 2 on line 21? I understand that this is optional, and we'll get into that in a minute, but the language here on line 21 says the department shall annually design and produce. So even though the selling of the pin may be optional, it'll be mandatory then that the state design and produce and make available.
And if they want to make it permissible, put May in there, you can, but if you put May in there, then it kind of backslides. Is probably the point. I didn't even look at that in the drafting part of it. But you're exactly right. It's mandated. The one thing I have is there's an amendment to the draft, the CS. It's on kind of a tan page there, and it's what this does. We'd originally put $5 in this CS, and like I already stated, I called around, and $20 is about the retail price for some of these collectible pins that we talked about. So that's basically what this allows, and it allows them to be sold to Alaska businesses, and they can run them through their gift shops just like they do any other product. So I'd entertain a motion.
You want a motion on the amendment?
Please let the record state that Senator Stevens is joining us. Excuse me? Yeah.
That guy there.
Oh, and Senator Seekins, he's stuck in. And Senator Dyson had a comment. comment or question a while ago, and I forgot about that.
Oh, I'm sorry, it'll be, I guess I'm uncomfortable with what we're doing here. We had a bill that was what, that was the wildlife viewing bill?
Yes.
Viewing fee bill. And you are, done some creative work here to kind of hijack that bill and turn it into something else. But is that, am I right in assuming that your purpose still is to raise money for fish and game?
Right. For wildlife, yeah. And like I said, I've talked to the bill sponsor, and he understands that we agree that we don't agree. And he gets another shot at this if he wants to revise it back in finance. But I just, there were so many questions and so many problems we ran into when we had the original bill in front of us. I thought this might be a compromise.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to put this amendment in the bill, or is this just an amendment for entertainment?
No, I think we should put this in the bill because it sets the price instead of the $5 we have on page 2 on line 24. It makes that a $20.
You want a motion?
Yeah. Point of order.
Senator Stanton.
We need to adopt the new version.
We already have.
Oh, good.
Version 9.
Senator Stanton.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move amendment number 1.
Okay.
And amendment number 1 would be the salmon-colored one with Senator Wagner's name on it. There's no number on it.
No.
And I object.
Were you done with the motion for discussion?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this is a process kind of a question, and I'd like to know how the amendment fits in with the language on page 2 that begins on line 25, where it says, if an agent decides not to sell the conservation pins at the agent's premises, the department shall make wildlife conservation pins available at participating locations where hunting licenses or fishing licenses can be purchased. The amendment seems to make that language obsolete because this would allow the department to just give it to anybody.
Yes.
At any time, whether or not an agent has decided to not sell the pin.
That's exactly right.
So do we need to delete subsection C with the adoption of this amendment?
I don't.
I don't think we need to. I think if we add E in there, it just gives them more options. And I don't know the exact reason that C showed up that way. That's probably a carryover from the original bill. I just haven't had time to review it. It's not there. The main emphasis on this amendment was to when we looked at it this morning, we had $5 there. The main thing was to allow them to sell them not to exceed $20 and get that $5 amount out. And then the idea with E is, yeah, let anybody who has a gift shop where tourists go or anybody who sells small items through their stores, allow them to put them out as collectibles and let them sell. And the way the pins would be distributed, they would be pre-sold. In other words, if you had a card, I assume they would, that's the way most of this stuff does. You have a card with 20 on it, you pay 50% of the retail price, you have them, they're in your shop, they're yours to sell. Senator Elton.
Mr. Chair, I'm still somewhat concerned about the potential conflict between C and then the new language in E, because C makes it sound like any Alaska business can sell the pin, or E, the amendment language, makes it sound as if any Alaska business can sell the pin. C makes it sound like the only Alaska businesses that can sell the pin are Alaska businesses that also sell hunting or fishing licenses.
I'm going back to B. Let's see if there's discretionary. I'm just trying to try that back into that B section. At the discretion of the agent, an agent who is not a state employee, appointed by the commissioner under A of this section, may also sell wildlife conservation pins. Where's my cover sheet? I don't even see an A.
Yeah.
Maine, Mr. Chairman.
Line 21.
Yeah, Senator Dyson?
Respectfully, I suggest
Go ahead.
Might want to put this bill to the bottom of our agenda, let you and your capable staff work on a little bit, and come back to it.
A motion to table?
No. A respectful suggestion okay. to a capable chairman.
With the concurrence of this committee, we can do that. The committee would concur.
That's a chair's decision.
Yeah, we'll do that. Well, we haven't had a lot of time to look at this thing.
Mr. Chairman, we could.
So it has the amendment, the motion for the amendment, and we'll take that up. Senator Stedman.
This bill definitely fills up my email box. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
The next one?
Well, that one and the one we just put on the floor.
Before we put that down at the bottom of the agenda and move it, there is one person who wants to testify from the Outdoor Council on 166. Are you on there, Mr. Arnold?
Yes, sir. I was only going to testify on 170, not 166.
We've got you listed as 166. Okay. Thank you. All right. So the next bill in front of the committee is Senate Bill 170. And I don't plan to move this bill today. We've got it scheduled again next week. We need a motion. We got a new new draft in front of us. It's backslash C. Need a motion to. Well, wait a minute. Do we have backslash? Yeah.
Let's see.
Backslash C.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dyson.
Yes, Chairman. I move that we accept LSO 94 backslash C Kane. Sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 170 as our working document.
Okay. And so at this time, the sponsor wants.
Yeah, just a minute to set up, Mr. Chairman, if I can.
Oh, okay. Let's go off.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Ralph Seekins, Senate District D. Looking at Senate Bill 170, and Senator Stedman, that's the one that, after my wife shot her moose, decided it might want to try to challenge me. But, and I begged it not to, and it left. We're talking about Senate Bill 170, and I want to just go through the intent of the bill. It's to increase revenue needed for management of fish and game by adopting staged increases in hunting, fishing, trapping fees, stamps, permits, prints, applications, and tags. And it's to ensure that the revenue that's generated from hunting and fishing, trapping, and trapping fees, stamps, permits, prints, applications, tags, along with the federal matching funds from Pittman, Robertson, and Dingell, Johnson, Wallop, Bro programs, are used for programs designed to maximize the abundance, productivity, and harvest of fish and game populations that are important for human consumption. Also, it intends to provide accurate and timely by-project reporting to the legislature and to hunters and fishers about how the fish and game fund money is used. It to provide a definition of project, which is not in statute now, to require increased accountability regarding how the department has implemented intensive management programs that were approved by the Board of Game, to clarify the duties and responsibilities of the commissioner and various operating sections within the department, allow a greater Board of Game flexibility for authorizing management of various wildlife populations, legislatively authorize methods and means designed to more efficiently reduce bear populations when it's necessary to protect and restore prey populations in specific areas where the prey populations are important for human consumption, allow for the sale of mounts, trophies, or parts of lawfully taken fish or game animals, allow for legal harvest of animal by a validly licensed resident who's in the field with another validly licensed resident on behalf of that resident, i.e. a daughter harvest mother's caribou, allow a pre-qualified, experienced resident to accompany a non-resident but no more than 2 in any 1 year for the taking of a bear in an intensive management area where high bear populations are identified as a significant part of the problem, provide that members of the military on active duty who are permanently stationed in the state and their dependents who do not qualify as residents may obtain special non-resident hunting and fishing licenses at the same rate as if they were residents. Here's what we did on license and fee and permit increases. This is in response to a real need. That we've had no increase in hunting licenses and fees since 1992, even though inflation has eaten into about 45% of that in that particular time. It's addressed in sections 19 through 54 of the bill. It takes place in three stages. January 1st, 2007 will be the first stage, January 1st, 2009 the second, and 2011 the third stage. And this also would bring non-resident, non-resident alien license tags and fees with other in line with other premium hunting destinations. And it adds a trophy fee schedule for non-resident and alien non-resident hunters, again consistent with other premium hunting destinations. In the area of accountability, 1605.130 provides that revenue from sale of fishing, hunting license tags, etc., must be allocated to programs intended to directly benefit licensed purchasers. Without admitting any guilt, the department admits that having in the past stretched the interpretation of directly benefit. And I don't think they're doing that at this particular time. I think that the accountability is much better under the current administration. Senate Bill 170 tightens up the no diversion provisions. 1505.130 also requires the department to prepare an annual report by project. Until this year, for quite some time, the department really has ignored that statutory requirement. And the excuse that one was asked was that the statutes did not define the word project. Project is defined in 170. Accountability SB 170 tightens up the no diversion provisions. Fish and game fund monies may only be used for programs that are designed to enhance the abundance, productivity, or harvest of fish or game populations that are important for human consumption. It tightened up the definition in design for that basically to put into to produce abundance for human consumption. Requires a once-in-year report by project to the legislature and on the ADF&G website. It clarifies some of the functions of the commissioner, where it basically puts in there that they shall manage fish and game and aquatic plant resources of the state to achieve abundance for the use and benefit of the people of the state consistent with the public interest and to achieve maximum sustained yield, and shall manage non-game animals for the benefit of the people of the state. It clarifies some functions of the subsistence section, where they would compile data and conduct studies to gather information, including data on the use of fish and game resources by subsistence users and on compliance with state fishing, hunting, and trapping license requirements by subsistence users. Intensive management. allows the Board of Game to implement intensive management decisions without additional survey information. It would allow them to use community advisory boards that made up of local people familiar with the fish and game populations to provide some of that information demonstrating or confirming a need for enhancement or control actions. Bear control methods and means. It's here the intent is to provide the licensed hunter a higher probability to harvest a bear in an area where a high bear population is identified as a reason for depressed ungulate populations or as a reason the ungulate population is not able to recover. The sale of mounts and trophies. A mount or trophy transported out of state now can be legally sold. You can take a mount or trophy from Alaska to Washington State, sell it to someone. The buyer can then bring it back to the state of Alaska. The state-owned trophies have no value in Alaska, thereby encouraging their export. A regulated in-state sale process of tagged mounts or trophies is a reasonable program and one that I think has no threat to the resource whatsoever. Harvest by Hunting Companion, here it allows a reportedly common infield practice to become legal. The harvester must be in the field, accompanied by the person who would otherwise harvest the animal, for resident hunters only. Resident accompanying a non-resident, only well, this would be only in areas of intensive management. It's meant to put more hunters in the field. It's limited to two persons each year. Both must pass the hunter safety course designed by the department, and the resident cannot receive any monetary benefit from the non-resident. It's canceled when the bear population is back within the population objectives. The military license fee, it's for, as I said, for permanently stationed military members and their non-resident dependents only, while stationed in Alaska, and expires when reassigned outside of the state. It's broadly supported by the military and from many of the other people in the, across the state and the communities. Briefly, that's what the bill does, Mr. Chairman. It's other than that, it has some minor clerical functions in there, a lot of additions of the term stamp here or there, for an example, across the various parts of the bill. But that is the meat of the bill, and I'm more than willing to answer any questions.
Questions for Senator Seekins?
Senator Kukesh.
Senator Kukesh.
I have a couple. How do you propose to get people into rural Alaska to give that hunter education course that you just spoke about a minute ago?
It would be, Senator Kukesh, through the chair, it would be a proposed that it would be available in offices or online to be able to use that. It would be, in today's electronic world, almost every village and community has a school. They've got a really good online system set up in there. I think a lot of the people, I think we're the most connected state in the nation on online services, but it would also be online.
Senator Kukesh.
It just seems kind of odd to tell somebody who's lived all their life in rural Alaska and hunted that you have to take a safety hunter course now in order to have somebody go out with you.
I agree with that.
That's something that I understand could happen in urban Alaska, people who don't grow up with guns. But anyway, just wanted to ask the question.
The purpose for that, Senator Kukesh, to the chair, is it's a very sensitive area. In Alaska, we do have a guide requirement for big game, for bears, for sheep, and for goats. And in my opinion, that guide requirement is hanging on a very thin thread already, because someone who lives here for 12 months can all of a sudden go out and hunt those animals as a resident without any concern for the safety or for anything else. Don't even have to know which end of a gun it points forward, and they are allowed to hunt as a resident. Or I am allowed to take someone up to second degree of kindred out with me to hunt bear or sheep or goats right now, without me having any particular knowledge about about our conservation laws, about safety or about weather systems. I can already do that up to a degree, and so I do believe that if the guide requirement is ever challenged by someone on the basis of it's an attorney general's opinion from 20 or 30 years ago that it's based on, if it was ever challenged in court, and I could not find where it ever has been, that it's going to have a hard time surviving. But in the meantime, I'm not interested in trying to find a way not to jeopardize that guide requirement, but to make sure that if someone is going to participate in, I'll give you an example. My daughter's father-in-law could hunt with me in the area where I hunt under this requirement if both of us pass that safety requirement. It's trying to basically say that there is still some reason why a non-resident should have to be accompanied by someone who's familiar with our conservation laws, familiar with big game, familiar with the weather systems. So it's trying to accomplish the purpose of enlisting more people to hunt for bears in an area that's under intensive management without jeopardizing that guide requirement. Now, I'm not sure that it's possible that we can do that, but that's what I'm trying to do there. And I understand that someone who's lived out in the bush forever could probably do that and is very well equipped to be able to do that. I'm just trying to protect that one interest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a kind of a follow-up. I completed that hunter safety course along with my daughter this fall. She's 11. I forgot how many evenings we went to it. It was numerous. And they had several rifles, bolt action, lever action, semi-automatic, and pump. And I don't know how the system would work if it was all over the internet, because in that class there was a lot of hands-on and handling the weapon and passing it from one person to another one and getting around obstructions. And I don't know what they do up in the interior or up in the rail belt area, but down here they spent quite a bit of time on just getting to the beach, how to get in and out of your boat. And most of the people that took it were either parents or young adults, very young, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old, starting into the hunting and wildlife experience. So it's,
I agree that there'd be some difficulty with that. There's a number of different approaches that could be used. The test could be monitored. There could be done by someone in the different remote communities who is a recognized hunter to be able to carry out some of the hands-on testing and demonstration. And I don't want it to be a terribly simple thing, but if someone wants to do it, I think I know people who would do it in a heartbeat if it meant they could take their as I said, maybe my daughter's father-in-law with them to be able to help get some of the bears out of an area. So I don't want it to be a simple thing, yet I think we could, in talking with some of the folks who I've worked with to try to figure out how you could test for that you would find, that almost every community will find someone in that community who is an experienced hunter fisher that could monitor or assist with the hands-on or with the or with the testing. I realize that's an obstacle, but I think it could be handled reasonably.
Senator Elton?
Kind of along on the same topic, and I apologize that, I mean, I got a fax this afternoon, Senator Seekins, a little after 2 when I was in another committee meeting, and a staff person has just brought it to me, but it is a 3-page letter to the president of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association from their counsel, Bill Horn, with Birch Horton Bittner. Have you had a chance to see that?
I just saw it a couple minutes ago. I did have a telephone conversation with Bill Horn earlier today.
I mean, if you could maybe address kind of the last paragraph, which in which Mr. Horn writes, to preserve the constitutionality of Alaska's guide requirement for non-resident hunters, we would strongly counsel against authorizing any exception to the guide requirement or a scheme in which special residents act as de facto guides in a non-commercial or quasi-commercial manner. I'd be interested in your reaction to his conclusion.
Well, I'm not sure that there is a constitutionality of a guide requirement. It's statutory. So I would disagree that there's any guide requirement in our Constitution whatsoever. If Mr. Horn means, and he's not here to answer, that we as a sovereign state can have that requirement without conflicting with the Commerce Clause, then it would cast a different light on it. Again, I will go back to the very thin string that I think that it hangs on right now. And if you go farther back in his letter, in his second paragraph, he says that guide requirement is predicated on considerations of hunter welfare and safety, resource management, enforcement of hunting regulations. And there's a number of cases that are in there, all of which I have read in the past as I looked at this. And I've gone back all the way to some of these cases in the 90s and the 80s, and recently the Ninth Circuit has been a little bit off whack, if you ask me, on how they approach some of these issues. But I will say, tell you that if I do believe that if anyone threatens, for an example, when you're out there with a guide right now, the requirement for the assistant guide that you're out with, if you are a non-resident hunter, is that that guide be 18 years old and have hunted big game in Alaska for 2 years, not even successfully, and be under, you know, be hired by a big game guide. I would wager that I arranged for three non-resident hunters that to come up and hunt in Alaska this year with a big game guide. I would wager that any one of those three is more experienced hunter and understands resource management and challenges of big game hunting more than the assistant guide that they'll spend their time with. And again, go to the next part. Once that person who is a non-resident lives in the state for 12 months, they can hunt these big game animals without any restriction whatsoever. So the point is that that's a very thin cord, which I'm trying not to challenge, but I'm not sure that it's a constitutional issue. I think it's a statutory issue, unless he means that there could be some kind of challenge against our guide requirement based on the Commerce Clause, which could happen. The alternative is to do nothing. And I don't like that alternative. I think if it's necessary that there be a case brought to determine whether or not that's legitimate, then maybe we ought to bring the case and find out. Not my first choice. But I was a little bit surprised also not to get any communication from Mr. Clutch or Mr. Horn, who I've known for years, and until sometime today.
Good question, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Alaska's pretty large, different, you know, from all areas of the state, but the assistant guides that I know, even though technically I think you're correct that they have to be 18 and, you know, be able to at least walk and talk, before they go out and take individuals hunting brown bear, which we have on the ABCs down here, Admiralty Baranoff and Chichikov, and the related islands, which are bear infested. I think there's supposed to be one bear every square mile on Admiralty. More bears than residents of Angoon.
Oh, yeah. And we know them all by name too.
Yeah. these fellows are experienced, and I know from my hunting experience, running into more of the weekend type hunters, I'd be rather cautious to be around them if they're out hunting that type of a big game, the brown bear in these islands. They're rather dangerous, and apparently the avenue or the areas up there where you're talking about are a lot different than down here.
I don't think the areas down here would be under intensive management for bear control, for one thing. But secondly, I would throw my ability up against any of those guys as well to be able to hunt dangerous animals, but I can't. And I would say that the guy who lives here 12 months, every one of them that lives here 12 months has the ability to go out and hunt out there. You know, and I'm not trying to make light of that. I do believe that you ought to have a qualified guide or you shouldn't go out there. If you don't know what you're doing, you better. And I'm not trying to jeopardize the guide industry. But so far, there's no other approach on trying to control the bear populations where we know they're having an adverse effect on the game, on the prey populations. So I'm willing to listen to any other approach that any other group has to be able to accomplish that. I've told the guides that for at least 3 years. And there is no alternative that's been approached. So this is a tough measure. I realize that. And I don't have a problem if someone says, well, there is another way that we can approach it. I don't have a problem with that. I'm just trying to say that we have a real problem that needs to be addressed, and this is one way to try to do that.
It's understood.
If I can just switch gears just a little bit, the licenses and the increased costs, and last year we worked on a bill together dealing with some adjustments for fishing licenses, and it was kind of surprising out west that the amount of, or the lack of licenses sold. And I don't know how that works in southeast. I assume that Senator Kukesh and his colleagues all have proper licenses and tags.
We do.
unlike Western Alaska. So if we go down this road and do these adjustments, is there going to be a mechanism in place to try to get these outlying areas to, you know, have their hunting license and have their deer tags and their bear tags? And I mean, I was rather surprised last year. I think you probably were too. And
over the actually, the first time I heard about the disparity in number of hunting licenses was years ago when Senator Bundy was in the House, and we were on an airplane across the aisle, and he handed me a list and showed me. So I've known about the disparity for quite some time. However, one of the things that I think is important. Now, let me give you on the license fee increases. This is a schedule that was developed by the Anchorage Advisory Council and that I accepted from them and put in the bill. And I don't think that the Anchorage Advisory Committee is even laboring under the understanding that this would be the final list of, but it is a suggestion in what, in their opinion, would be equitable fees for licenses and tags and trophy fees for big game hunters in the state of Alaska. In addition to that, the chairman and I have talked about, as we looked at different states and their and how they do business, there may be a reason also in compliance with some of the Commerce Clause cases that are out there, that it may be advisable that even a resident pay something for a tag fee for a big game animal in addition to a hunting license. So, you know, we will discuss that, but I understand none of our fees have been increased since 1992, even though there's been a 45% inflation factor in that time frame. So, and the department is suffering under that. We had to come with a special capital appropriation form this year to be able to do the job that they need to do. And it's a user pay, user benefit type of a program. So this at this point, Senator, is a suggested list, which I'm not married to. I think we need a license increase, and it's open for the discussion.
Senator Stedman?
I'm just curious on the, and I'm looking, and I guess I'm not speedy enough here this late in the day. What would for the resident, I see all the non-resident stuff, but for the resident, like a bear tag, along with your hunting license, what would that be?
Some states on deer, for an example, have a $5 tag. Depends on what you're after, deer, elk. Not every state has grizzly bears, you know. We're kind of unique there. And in many parts of the state, we don't charge for a grizzly bear tag now because we encourage people to go in there and shoot one a year with no tag fee. If you're shooting in other areas, there is a tag fee. But the suggestion may be, Senator, that there be some kind of a nominal fee for a harvest tag, where today we give them away. 75,000 people, roughly, and the last time I looked, the last year I looked, got a moose tag. And only 7,000 of them harvested a moose. So.
I
can't remember what I pay every year. I get a brown bear tag almost every year. I thought it was like 25 or 50 bucks or something,
yeah,
in addition, and along with the tag, a little metal tag. And not that I'm out hunting bear, because I do everything I can to avoid them, but in case that they decide to dine on my picnic table and it gets a little crowded, I have to take care of it. I don't have to give up the bear.
Right.
And I'm not the only one, you know, in Southeast that pack a bear tag, because you never know when you're out hunting deer.
Mm-hmm. Where I hunt, you don't have to have a tag. You can shoot one a year.
Yeah. One every 5 years down here, Elmer?
Yeah.
Senator Kukesh? Next one, yes.
Further questions of the sponsor at this time?
Well, everybody's going to be shy. I got a couple more.
Senator Stedman?
In the bill, it seems like there's a kind of a redirection of effort with expenditures of the fish and game. And is some of that stuff better left to the subcommittee, finance subcommittee, or the budgeting process to try to evolve the fish and game into what the legislature wants it to look like versus the bill? Or has that been tried and there's just resistance within the organization? Or?
Historically, the money that goes in there into the Fish and Game Fund, which is an allowable so-called designated fund, has been used at the discretion of the department, but the sideboards have only been that it be used for programs that are for the direct benefit of those people who put the money in, the hunters and fishers. Over the years, during the Knowles administration, where they virtually would not spend any money for predator control, there was a systematic reduction of general fund monies that went into the department. So if they're not going to manage, they're not going to get any money. It was a systematic reduction that took place over a number of years. So the department, you know, still had programs that they wanted to fund, and so they devised ways to be able to determine that there was some direct benefit to the people who hunted and fished by continuing to fund, say a songbird program. Hunters objected to that. They wanted the department to have wide discretion here, Senator Stedman, so that if you said, we need money for surveys for predator control for intensive management, that they could go do that, and if they scheduled it for Unit 13, and all of a sudden the weather turned sour in Unit 13, but they had the manpower to be able to do it, and they needed to do one in Unit 19, that they could transfer that over there without having any constraints in the budget to be able to do that. But as long as it was for that purpose, they felt that they should be able to do that. So the only sideboards that were put on there were for the direct benefit of those people who put the money in the first place. And then the check and balance was that there was supposed to be an annual report by project on how they spent the money. Sometime in the past, and I can't find out exactly when, they quit doing that. Now they're doing it again. I mean, this year they're bringing it back up online. They're doing it again. But when we asked why they hadn't been doing it, the answer was because project wasn't defined in statute. It was our fault because we didn't tell them what we wanted. Well, I kind of felt like they could have guessed at what project meant at that time, and I'm not trying to point any fingers at anybody in the department. I'm just saying it wandered away. I'm not in favor of going through the subcommittee process to define exactly how those dollars should be spent on a project-by-project basis. I think that it's an adequate safeguard to be able to say This is to be used for programs that are designed to directly benefit the people who put the money in there, and then make sure that there's a report that shows how it was spent, so that we can find out whether there is an abuse to that process. And if there is an abuse, then I think we may want to get more involved in the subcommittee process. But at this point, I don't suggest that. I think that when it did work under one administration that wanted to use it for those purposes, it worked fine. But there is a separation of powers issue there about how that was to be spent and whether or not they were going to spend it and whether or not we could force them to. And I don't think I want to get into that game today.
It's understood.
If I could, one more. And then I'll turn the floor for somebody else. On page 21, there's a paragraph 12, line 12 to line 20, and it talks about a fee or surcharge of $1 per person on licenses, and $5, I guess, for the non-residents, possibly. And then the money's to be used for acquisitions of easements, right-of-ways, and land to provide access to fishing game holders of hunting, trapping, sport fishing. And we dealt with a bill here today concerning that issue that had some severe language challenges with it, at least in my opinion. I'm just kind of wondering what is this animal we have lurking in the bill?
Here again, I listened to that other bill as well, and it mandated that they do something on a regular basis. And here we do know that there are times when it's important for the state to be able to acquire land, for an example, along riverways for parking areas, to be able to people to launch their boats into areas, boat launches, access to navigable streams and waters, and state-owned land, and to be able to do that, you know, through the process to be able to do that, I believe that it's important that people be where that's necessary, that we pay them fair market value for that access. And this is just creating a fund to be able to do that. It's not mandating any particular thing. It's meant to be able to accommodate that.
Let's take a brief at ease. He just got disconnected on us.
So anyhow, Senator Stedman, once again, this basically is there to be able to accommodate that where necessary, but not mandating it. It just sets up a fund to be able to do that.
Okay. Any further questions of the sponsor? This time? Okay. Thank you, Senator Siegel.
Thank you.
We have the department. Commissioner, would you like to address this bill? That's this time. Well, let's just go in order and have you make your presentation. Then we have several people that are going to speak to the bill per request of the sponsor. And then if we have any time, we'll take some public testimony. I don't think we're going to get there today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Makai Campbell, the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And I appreciate this. And in light of the fact that you do have a number of witnesses waiting to testify, I won't attempt at this time to go through on a section-by-section comment. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I would like to just make some general broad overview comments and then any questions that I can ask. This is a large, complex bill. And frankly, my feelings and reactions to it are fairly complex. There are some parts of it that we agree with and either support or have no objection to. There are some parts of it we agree with the intent, but don't believe that the language as drafted actually accomplishes that intent. There are some other parts that I certainly understand the motivation, but believe that the proposed fix may not actually achieve the cure. In fact, this may have counter effects. And lastly, there are some parts that we do strongly disagree with. I thank Senator Seekins for including a license fee increase. This is something that the department very strongly needs. We feel that it's probably more appropriately addressed next year, but we do appreciate him highlighting this issue. Right now in Alaska, hunting or fishing license, if you account for inflation, costs less than half than it did at statehood. And I think Senator Seekins accurately reflected how the department's general fund had declined over the previous administration to leave us in the financial situation we're in right now. So we do appreciate that. We did believe that the fee schedule that was contained in the original bill is more appropriate than the fee schedule that is in this proposed committee substitute. Also, continuing on the issue of money, one of the issues that's been raised a number of times is accountability. And I absolutely believe that our department owes it to the legislature and also to the people who purchase fishing and hunting licenses to be totally accountable and transparent in how we use that money. When I first came on board just over a year ago, Senator Seekins made me aware that there wasn't a requirement in the statute for an accounting of how fish and game funds are used. We moved very quickly to get an accounting up on the internet and on our page. If you go to our front page, you can very quickly get to that. But we also felt that was probably, it was an 8, 10, 12 page summary, but we felt that it was could be a good deal more detailed. So one of the things that we've done this year is we've published that summary, again, an update for this year. But we have also furnished to the finance committees as required and to Senator Seekins and other interested senators very detailed spreadsheets in nature of 20-some pages in length that do go through project by project by project in doing that. And I, just for the record, I should note the question of, you know, why aren't you doing this and we don't have a definition of a project. My understanding is that was a question Mr. Levengood asked an accounting tech in the Fairbanks office. I think it's an accurate quote of his answer, but I would say that's not an accurate reflection of departmental policy. One of the things the bill does is it has a definition of project in it. We think that's a good definition and think that's a reasonable definition. But with or without it, we are going to continue to give you a totally transparent and full accounting of every penny we're spending in the Fish and Game Fund and how we're spending it. The main issue that I guess I would like to speak to that I'm most concerned about in this bill, and there are quite a few of them, is the issue that occurs on page 3, section 4, subsection C, where it says, notwithstanding other provisions of law, plan, strategy, agreement, guideline, or similar document that establishes or affects a policy for the management of fish, game, or aquatic resources that is prepared by the department shall be submitted to the Board of Fisheries, the Board of Game, or both as appropriate for the board's approval before the department implements this policy. What I truly believe is we right now do policy and plans and strategies and agreements and guidelines every single day, multiple ones. And I think, again, we owe it to all to be totally transparent about what those are, that we make sure that the constituencies that have particular interest in those are informed and involved. But the requirement that we submit them to the boards and require and get the board's approval, I have great concern about for two reasons. One is I'm very concerned that this leads pretty quickly to almost a full-time board. Now, we have actually fashioned our fiscal note on a much more conservative assumption. What we have fashioned our fiscal note is on the basis that we continue to have the volunteer board, we pay them the per diem, that once a month we get them together on a teleconference and we run everything we've done for that month by them. But whether or not we can find individuals who will actually do that without being paid full-time, I guess I have some doubts. But I also have concerns that anything that we do, I think, that we haven't gone through, anything we do that we haven't gone through the board, we put ourselves vulnerable to lawsuit where folks would say, wait a minute, that was a policy or that was a plan and you didn't take it by the board. Let me say, I fully understand and have sympathy with the motivation about some of the handcuffs that were put on the department during the previous administration. And I fully understand that this and many other parts of this bill are an attempt to prevent such actions if we found ourselves in that situation again. And I agree with that motivation. I have great sympathy for it. But what I worry about is in the process of trying to make sure that doesn't happen, we're actually winding up with handcuffs now that greatly reduce our ability to do it. Now, one thing I really want to make a point of, in my conversations throughout with Senator Seekins, he has indicated a willingness to work with us on this, and I've greatly appreciated that, and I do trust and we will want to work with him on that. So I really do appreciate that. There are a number of other items, like the may not transfer more than $20,000 between projects, objects of expenditures, or allocations. Again, we've had a discussion. I think we agree on the intent. I think we have a disagreement on what this wording actually provides. There are many, many other issues, and if you wish, I'd be happy to walk through the bill, and I'll tell you, there are things in here that we support. For instance, there is a provision in here for sale of trophies. It's one of the issues that Senator Seekins highlighted on his PowerPoint. And I should say, this is sort of a devil's in the details situation. What I saw in the PowerPoint, at least the large majority of, I agree with the intent. But the devil is in the details is the language actually doing it. But for instance, on the sale of trophies, that is something we agree is something that we supported at a recent Board of Game meeting. It did not pass, but we intend to take it back. But we're also very, very concerned in terms of how it does on terms of sale of parts of animals, because we'd be adamantly opposed to anything that inadvertently creates a situation that encourages poaching for either sale of game meat or encourages poaching for sale of bear claws or other items like this. Let me stop, because I think otherwise I can go way more time than we have, and I know I won't allow other people to talk.
We can have you back again, and you're pretty available. Are there questions of the commissioner at this time? Ooh. Senator
Allen. Mine's very simple, okay. Mr. Chair. And I know that last year I had asked the Department of Law to review the version of 170 that we had at that point. Have you gotten any response from the Department of Law that that deals with the issues in a sectional type of a way so that you've got guidance from your attorneys about the implications of the various sections in this bill?
Senator Elton, Mr. Chairman, Senator Elton, we have, and based on their advice, we did work up a sectional. We provided that to Senator Seekins last year. We did not provide that to anyone else. We felt that at that stage, and actually at this stage, that the ability to work on this was perhaps best enhanced by continuing to work in that relationship. We now have a new CS that we received last night. There are some changes in here that I think are good. There's some other changes I need to spend more time with. So we have not done a revised sectional at this stage.
Mr. Chair, just a Just a comment. I mean, now that it's in front of the whole committee, I would think that the analysis by the Department of Law would be material that we would need before we make a decision.
Yeah. Well, if I can, what we have is a sectional that our department has developed based on advice, well, based on both our analysis and based on advice from Department of Law. We do not have a separate written document that is a sectional from Department of Law. We never have that,
no,
had that.
Never had.
But we have a sectional by our department that includes, that in our analysis includes the advice we were given by the Department of Law.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be a very helpful document to the rest of us now as we're preparing to make a decision.
Get that to Mary.
Just, Mr. Chairman, a quick question. Would it be helpful, and to this question to you and the sponsor, for us to revise that sectional in light of the sponsor substitute and or the one we have now is based on last year's bill?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
If he doesn't, he's going to be beating at the wind.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. You could probably update it, revise it, and then get it to Mary, and she can distribute it to the committee.
We'll do that.
And, Mr. Chairman, I've never seen a sectional by the Department of Law in my 4 years here. Maybe it's something new.
I don't think Senator Elton was asking for a sectional.
My understanding is the Department of Law advice was incorporated in the department's
sectional. That is correct. We did not receive a sectional by the Department of Law. We received advice and incorporated that into our sectional analysis.
Senator Dyson.
I'm a little wary of the time here, but it seems to me that one of the things Senator from Fairbanks wants to do is to strike a new balance here, and all of us are concerned that we not have people hunting illegally, trespassing on private property, misusing game, and not cleaning up their messes and packing out the usable, salvageable material. And it sounds like he's wanting to allow some other folks to be out without having to have a full-time game, big game hunter guide. The other thing it sounds like he's trying to do is to provide some more resources to the department for harvesting predators that need to be controlled more than you now have through the various programs. Is there a better way to do what he's wanting to do, if I've characterized it right?
Mr. Chairman, again, this bill does many, many things.
Yep.
But in terms of how those specific items that you referred to are, we believe that we would like to offer opportunities in language and on how to do some of that in ways that we believe would have less chance of unintended side effects or unintended consequences as you proceed.
Senator Stebbin.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the more you know, look at this bill, it's pretty complex. So I think I'll just hold my questions until we get sectional and you can detail it in a more orderly fashion.
You have some sequence to do?
Just one thing, Mr. Chairman, just as a comment, if I can. We talked about that Section C for just a moment there, and basically what precipitates some of that is the fact that there are agreements that affect management policy in the state of Alaska that neither the Board of Game nor the legislature knows anything about on a formal basis whatsoever. And I guess I would point to one example that happened prior to this commissioner being here, but the State Wildlife Grant Project, which was 600 pages long, included 70-plus species with no board or legislative review, and it was the question was, is that a document that commits us in receiving those federal funds having to do with that document to particular management processes and management actions that would never have had any external review. They would have been by either the Board of Game or by the legislature.
And so it became fairly evident over time that in terms of things, everything from documents and guidelines and strategies and agreements that affect the policy for the management of these animals, which is a responsibility of the legislature and of the Board of Game to be involved in, there was no involvement in that process. We're not trying to say, well, this particular biologist should go over here to do that or something else. It's say, okay, we're going to enter into an agreement, a memorandum of understanding, something else having to do with management policy or with how animals are managed in the state of Alaska, and it's in effect an agreement that never receives much more than the light of day. We're just asking for a light of day type of a deal here, so that those people who are charged with that fiduciary responsibility for management actually are involved.
Mr. Chairman, if I can give just one quick example that perhaps highlights my concern. I spent Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. I sit on that council and am a member there. One of the issues that we were dealing with there was the halibut charter issue. One of the issues that was hotly contested at that was whether or not skippers and crew should be able to retain fish, whether there were going to be accountability measures, separate accounting, a number of different things. Senator Seekins had written a letter to the council, which I appreciated, which urged strongly certain measures. I was able to, and I say those measures in general lined up with several positions that the state was taking at that point. We were able to be effective and win at the council because at that council, at the table, at that moment, I stood up and said, you know, on behalf of the state, this is what I'm going to do. I'm committing as a matter of policy that because we're over the GHL and Southeast, I am going to enforce the skipper and crew no retention in Southeast, and that in South Central, I am going to watch the GHL very closely. We do not appear to be over right now, but if logbooks, creel samplers, all these other things, I am also committing that I will at that point implement skipper and crew in South Central as well. That was a policy commitment that I made on the behalf of the state of Alaska that I would use my EO authority to do this, and as such was able to realize a goal, Senator Seekins, which you were urging us to do. Without that, we would not have been able to realize that goal, and I would not have been able to do it if I'd had to go to the Board of Fish and come back a month later and say it's okay. And I just offer that as sort of one example. I do understand the concerns, and I am committed to transparency, to full disclosure, and I would urge you to hold any future commissioners to that, and you have a wide variety of resources to do so.
One more comment, then we're going to set this bill aside and come back next week to it. And Senator Olson's here, and I want to give him a chance to give the sponsor statement, at least on Senate Bill 278 to us. So, Senator Olson.
Yeah, and I'll just make it brief. It's a continuation of the line of questioning on subsection C in section 4 on page 3. And Commissioner, I'm curious, if the language in subsection C had been law 6 months ago, can you give me some kind of an idea what would have happened? I mean, we had a challenge to the predator control program that was based on procedural issues. If this language had been law at that time, it seems to me that we're creating a whole bunch of different questions that attorneys could raise to affect the predator control policy. Am I misunderstanding the potential effect of subsection C?
I am just very concerned. I certainly know that is not the intent, but I am, as I said, very concerned
that this could be used by anyone who disagreed with anything the department did, that if we had not taken it to the board and gotten it specifically blessed, that they would use this section to come after us. Whether or not that would have affected the particular predator control policy, I don't know. In terms of the predator control policy, one thing I am very concerned about is in section 15, item E1, that's on page 9, there's language added about consumptive use of the big game prey population as preferred use, and based on information provided by the department or another reliable source that would lead a reasonable person who is knowledgeable about wildlife in the state to form an opinion. The difficulty is, I sometimes joke that I have one of the easier jobs in the state because we have around 640,000 folks in the state, and fully three-quarters of them are experts in fish and wildlife matters. All I need to do is do what they tell me, and I have, you know, have an easy job. Well, in this case, there are many, many people who I think a court would qualify as reliable and reasonable, many of whom they might have dramatically different opinions about what we want to do in the board and with predator control. I will use an example. Vic Van Ballenberg is a well-credentialed biologist. I disagree with many of his conclusions, but I don't think anyone could say that he is not a reliable, reasonable person who's knowledgeable about wildlife. I think we would wind up in court all the time with this language, and I know that that's not the intent. So that's why I hope to work and be able to work with you to improve the, get where I know you want to go.
With that, I'm going to set this bill aside, and we'll come back to it. I believe it's the 9th, 21st, 20, next Friday. I want to apologize for those people who have been very patient and are online and we're going to testify, but we're running out of time very quickly and we have to adjourn at 5 o'clock. So with that, I'd like to call Senator Olson up and just have him present his Senate Bill 278 to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and respected members of the committee. I'm Senator Donald Olson, and I'm the sponsor of Senate Bill 278, which has to do with the Alaska Climatological Change Task Force that has been proposed. I introduced Senate Bill 278 to go ahead and address the real implications that climate warming has going to have or is having presently on the Alaska's economy as well as its domestic well-being. The climate changes that have happened in the recent past have been centered around discussions as to whether these changes that are going on right now are part of a natural cycle that is going to go and come like all natural cycles do, or are we on the cusp of the onset of an impending catastrophic environmental situation. To many Alaskans, the reality of this warming trend is going to have direct and immediate concerns. These overshadow the global debate over the causes and the appropriate macro solutions to what's going on. What matters in our region is that the world is experiencing detrimental effects of the warming trend today, and the prospects for the near future may be even more damaging. For this reason, I think it's important for the state to take a hard and honest look at what's happened, what is going to happen, and if these warming trends continue, what are going to be the implications on the social and economic health of our citizens, communities, and industries? Right now, there are too many unanswered questions. How will this affect our forests? Our forests, game, fish, and river and shoreline erosion. What will happen to the permafrost stability, to our homes, community facilities, the roads, the airports, and yes, the lifeblood of our economy, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, or the possibility of the natural gas pipeline? How will it affect new development opportunities in the Arctic and subarctic areas? Senate Bill 278 creates a task force to review and analyze these warming impacts on Alaska and its citizens. It is made up of 13 people from individual and diverse backgrounds. of which have expertise in the Arctic, whether it's climatological, geological, engineering, ecology, or other appropriate disciplines. Four representatives of state agencies will also be on the panel to key in on what the responsibilities as it affects the state's resources and transportation infrastructure. The task force is charged with the following: to go ahead and look at the current and potential aspects to its citizens and natural resources and the economy, to estimate the cost to the states and the citizens for what the trends are going on, and to make recommendations to address the near and long-range future, long-range effects of climate changes in Alaska. With that, I submit this to you for your consideration and possible passage. Thank you.
Are there questions of the sponsor at this time? Senator Stedman?
Late, everybody must be getting tired. Senator Olson, what? Mr. Chairman, I'm just kind of curious what role the university has and why they wouldn't do this type of a project or in conjunction with this task force, or what exactly is the task force supposed to come back with?
As I've pointed out, and maybe I should have made it clear, the task force is to, one, figure out, is there indeed a concern that is out there? Because we know that there are normal cycles to the climatological changes throughout the world. If there is something, how long is it going to last? Is it indeed something that's going to result in a catastrophe that needs to be addressed sooner than later, and then come back with recommendations in several years to go ahead and either yes or no that there are changes that need to be concerned, and if there are, what are those recommendations that we should be concerned about? With that, Mr. Chairman, I actually have some amendments to this, to the bill that's in front of you for your consideration, which either can be done in this committee or if it's passed out, we'll do it in the next committee.
We may not get past this committee. if you give those to Ms. Jackson, we're right up against our timeline now. I believe we got this scheduled next Wednesday again.
Thank you.
So we'll look at it that time. There's nothing more for the committee. We'll be adjourned.